I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force.
Yo! And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the south, going down. Audio Shop Talk right in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. I am bringing you your weekly sports news headlines, best way I know how. Right, we get in and we're talking about it and we have fun, but we put our own black perspective on it. And we do our best to talk about our athletes in the best light. Now, if they messing up, then we got to call them on, call them to the carpet. Got to call you to the carpet if you're messing up. Hey, I've even called myself to the carpet one time. So nobody is exempt. We got an exciting, exciting, exciting show today. I'm so excited. I'm so hyped for the show today. But before we get into it, you know, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the Southern unsung heroes of the African diaspora through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization. A new addition is the On the Shoulders of Giants online courses, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. And the last thing On the Shoulders of Giants does is bring you African history to your face, whether it's lectures, educational classes, keynote speaking sessions, anything you need from On the Shoulders of Giants, whether it's face-to-face or digital, they can bring you what you need. All you got to do is visit the website at www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org, your stories for the heroes of the African diaspora, who we normally wouldn't learn about. Once again, www.ownershoulders1.com or www.ownershoulders.org. Right, let's get into our rundown on what we're talking about today on Lay Fix. All right, so our HBCU spotlight is shined on a former punter from University of Arkansas, Pine Bluff, who made his debut with the Cleveland Browns over the past weekend, and say he made a real solid debut. Hey, man, kick that thing in the gear, buddy. Getting into our stories, Nyel Ivey, I believe I'm saying her name right. She's a former Phoenix Mercury player, and she has now been hired as an assistant coach for the Memphis Grizzlies. We're going to get into that. Football, great. Running back Adrian Peterson is apparently in serious, serious debt. So we're going to talk about that. We've got to have our money right. We're going to give you a rundown of the NBA All-Decade first, second, third teams from the 2010. I don't totally agree with the list, but we're going to talk about it, kind of break it down. So that's the All-NBA Decade team for the 2010s. We're going to talk about that. Continuing our Life After Sports segment, we have a young man named Albert Chester Jr. Some of you may know who he is, some of you may not, but Albert Chester Jr. is the son of a FAMU legend, Albert Chester Sr., and he's carved out his own path and made a great way for him in the life after sports, so we're going to talk about that. Have you heard of the Brian Banks family? So the family is about a young man named Brian Banks who was falsely accused of sexual assault and he lost some years on his life. We're going to break that down and talk about that. You know, I was talking about sexual assault on both ends, whether it's a truthful accusation or false accusation. So we're going to talk about that. A basketball player whose last name is Cooper, and you know, I get more into it so you can get the actual full name, but this is just a tease. So he was suspended from basketball, from his team, and playing basketball because he failed the drug test, which revealed that he was pregnant. So we know you cheated, bro. We know you cheated. And that's our pre-rant rant. And so the actual Monday or the weekly rant, I should say the weekly rant, is aimed at the NCAA for creating their racist Rich Paul rule to try to circumvent Rich Paul and other black agents who are being successful at what they're doing, trying to curb them so they won't be successful. NCAA full of shit, and, you know, I stay on the NCAA because they stay with that bull. So let's go ahead and get into it. Let's get into it. Let's get into it. Because you know what time it is.
Bring it down, like. Yes, yes. Yes, yes.
I do the roll, baby. So former University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff football player, the punter, Jamie Gillian has made his NFL debut as the Cleveland Browns opened the preseason hosting the Washington Redskins. Gillian, who signed as a free agent following the NFL draft, averaged 42 yards on two punts, including one inside the 20, as the Browns opened the preseason with a 30-20 win over the Redskins. And that's good because we don't like the Redskins because we Cowboys, so we Cowboy Nation. And guess what, y'all? Football back. Football back. Oh, no. But Gillian led the SWAC with an average of 42.9 yards per punt to rank 13th in FCS football with a net average of 37.5 yards in 2018. A total of 19 punts traveled more than 50 yards, and 27 of his punts were down inside of the opponent's 20-yard line. Gillian also had 31 touchbacks, which ranked 16th nationally and allowed only 17.4 yards per return. Gillian. Gillian earned first-team All-SWAC honors at both punter and kicker. The Browns continue the preseason next Saturday against the Indianapolis Colts. So Gillian is a punter, and now he's with the Browns. He's actually a white guy. So one time for Jamie Gillian, coming from Arkansas Pine Bluff. The thing is, you know, one of the main reasons we do this HBCU Spotlight, for those who may have forgotten, and for those who are new to the podcast, right? The HBCU Spotlight is to shine a light on HBCU athletes, because mainstream athletic outlets or media outlets don't. But since this is my podcast and my outlet, and I do what I want to do, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to do what I want to do. We want to make sure we take the time to recognize players who come from HBCU athletic programs, who are making strides at the next level, or even at the HBCU level, at the collegiate level, who are balling, who are here balling. So we want to make sure we give them their roses. And this is why we do this HBCU spot. Let's just kind of break down for those who may not know, who may be new to the podcast, but the HBCU spotlight. So Jamie Gillian, I said Gillian. I messed his name all up. So Jamie Gillian is now with the Cleveland Browns, and he out here balling, punting that ball, getting on down, making sure nobody can return that punt. And if you play football, then you understand why that is so important. So I want all y'all to get up out y'all seats, put y'all hands together for Jamie Gillian of the Cleveland Browns. Jamie. Kick that ball, Jamie, go kick that ball. kick that ball, Jammy Jammy, say kick that ball. Say kick that ball, Jammy Jammy, say kick that ball. So one time for it, man. You know, I want to see as many players from the HBCU ranks get to the highest level of sports competition and ball up. No, I'm talking about, forget the politics, man. Ball out. All right, so let's move on. So let's get into our stories after our spotlight. So now, Nyel Ivey, she's the, this headline said, Nyel Ivey, mother of Purdue 2020 commitment, Jaden Ivey, named Memphis Grizzlies assistant coach. I'm excited about that. She's the third woman hired as an NBA assistant coach this offseason. So, Jaden's mother and former WNBA player and Notre Dame's women's basketball assistant was one of six hires announced Monday as part of new Memphis Grizzlies Taylor Jenkins new Memphis Grizzlies coach Taylor Jenkins' staff. She becomes the ninth active woman on an NBA coaching staff and the first in Grizzlies franchise history. There's no other place that has impacted me more as a player, coaching person than Notre Dame, Ivy said in a Notre Dame news release. I've gained friendships and relationships that will last a lifetime. But the biggest impact that I've had is from the relationship I've had with Coach Muffet McGraw. I'm so grateful for Coach McGraw. She has been so much more than just a coach, mentor, and boss. She believed in me and gave me my first opportunity at Notre Dame, and I am forever grateful. I stand tall, confident, and ready because of the tools she has instilled in me. Nyel Ivey played at Notre Dame prior to her WNBA career with the Indiana Fever, Detroit Shock, and Phoenix Mercury. An All-American point guard in college, she was named the 2001 Francis Pomeroy Naismith Award winner as the nation's best player under 5'8". The Fighting Irish won the NCAA championship that season, beating Purdue in the championship game. Ivey joins the trend of women's coaches recently hired to join NBA staffs. Longtime San Antonio Spurs assistant and enters her sixth season this fall. Ivy's the third hire this offseason following Lindsey Gottlieb of Cleveland Cavaliers and Kara Lawson of the Boston Celtics. I'm for Kara. Ivy served as assistant head coach and recruiting coordinator at Notre Dame. All nine of the program's final four appearances has come with her as either a player or coach. Jaden Ivey announced last week that he transferred from some school. I don't know. But Nyel Ivey, man. And what's so important about this is women are, as I've said before, women are more than capable of leading these basketball programs. We activists, I hate that there's an idea there's an idea that women, because physically they're not as strong as men, that across the board women can't do anything, that women are second class. And I want Nyel to ball out. I want Carl Lawson to ball out. I want Becky Hammon to ball out. I want all the women who are entering into these sports realms that are male-dominated, I want them to ball out. It's very, very, very important for us to recognize the women who are doing what they're doing, but also to help push forth the narrative that women can. Like, women aren't intellectually inferior than us. You know what I'm talking about? In some respects, if we break down to individual instances, there's a lot of dudes out there who should not be coaching. You know what I'm talking about? There's a lot of men out there who can't coach, but they keep getting opportunities, one reason or another. But women are not second-class citizens. Women can do any damn thing a man can do, and especially coach. I want to see women coaching college football. I want to see women coaching professional football. I want to see women managing baseball teams. I want to see women leading programs in the NBA, all these things. I understand steps have to be taken. But I'm excited about this because it's needed. It's very, 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 very much needed. If you're a male or even a female out there who look at something like this and be like, man, women shouldn't be doing this, you're a dumbass. Punk Black Perry, you're a dumbass. You're stuck in the damn Stone Age. You're a Neanderthal. A dumbass. Women can do anything men can do, and women have the capacity, when we're talking about in the sports realms, to coach. They got the capacity to coach. All you got to do is you study your craft. They study their craft, they could be just as effective as men. There's a lot of male coaches out there who don't study that. Hell, Jeff Fisher kept getting hired. Former NFL coach Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher is the model of mediocrity. Jeff Fisher is the shining example of what mediocrity is in professional coaching. But yet he kept getting hired. Jeff Fisher's nickname is Old 79, the Mr. 79. Why? Because that was his average. He averaged 7 wins and 9 losses in the season. But he kept getting hired. So you can't sit here and tell me that a woman can't. When it comes to coaching, shit. Women can. Women are more than capable of strategizing and leading these men. A lot of people think that they may not have the bravado to lead grown men or even college-age men. But, man, damn all that. Damn all that. Why? Because you stuck in some kind of Stone Age mindset. Come on, man. So, but I want to not to harp on this, but I just want to make sure I give my point and I get the information across that women are more than capable of doing these things, of leading men, especially in the sports realm. They're more than capable. Women are not second class citizens. All right, women are not just people who are just here, just have babies and stuff like that. They have the intellectual capacity to move mountains, to inspire nations. Man, look, I'm a historian. I've studied, especially black history. I've studied black history. I've studied individuals in black history. I have a list of countless women who have done amazing things. So we're going to make sure we keep pushing these narratives. We're going to make sure we keep supporting these women. Because if we don't support these women, who will? Who will? As black men, black males, it's our job to make sure that we support our women. So with that being said, Miss Nyel Ivey, who's a new assistant coach for the Memphis Grizzlies, we want to make sure that you understand that we love you and we support you. So everybody get up, put your hands together for Miss Nyel Ivey. So help me speak to you, heard me? Don't ever tell me what somebody can't do. Don't ever tell me what somebody can't do. You may not want them to, but that don't mean they can't. You heard me? Right. So let's keep this thing moving on like Maya. Adrian Peterson, man. AP. AP, AP, AP. AD all day. The headline says NFL star Adrian Peterson made close to $100 million, but apparently can't pay his debt. I hate these stories, but we got to talk about them. So, and it's saying this article, let me read the article a bit. So, Adrian Peterson will likely earn close to $100 million over the course of 12 seasons in the NFL. Now he's battling creditors in court over millions of unpaid loans. The Washington Redskins running back is making headlines over a state Supreme Court case in New York. The Angelo Vehicle Sales LLC, a McAdoo, Pennsylvania-based creditor, is suing Peterson, alleging he failed to fully repay a $5.2 million loan with interest and other fees, the sum climbed to $6.6 million. So the lawsuit was originally reported by the outlet The Atlantic. Further, a state court in Maryland recently ordered Adrian Peterson to pay $2.45 million to another creditor Democracy Capital Court of of something in Maryland. So while some may wonder how a person so handsomely compensated can fall into a debt trap, the answer may lie in a combination of overspending and poor advice from financial counsel. The truth behind Adrian Peterson's current financial situation is more than being reported at this time, said Peterson's attorney, Chase Carlson, in a statement on Twitter. So this is Chase Carlson's Twitter statement. The truth behind Adrian Peterson's current financial situation is more than is being reported at the time. Because of ongoing legal matters, I am unable to go into detail. But I will say this yet another. I will say this is yet another situation of an athlete trusting the wrong people and being taken advantage of by those he trusted. Adrian and his family look forward to sharing further details when appropriate. So, because of ongoing legal matters, I read that. So, though professional athletes often are blessed with more wealth than most people will ever see in their lifetime, they are fat targets for scammers, and they still struggle with saving and budgeting, and that is true. One example of out-of-control spending, Peterson apparently threw a lavish 30th birthday party in 2015, photos of which have resurfaced amid his current legal woes. Some, they say, had 320 guests attending the festivities, which feature elaborate ice sculptures and a rented camel. They say he rode in on the camel. I saw some other outlets saying he rode in on the elephant. Some say he rode in on the camel. So it's a high-stakes game. While a rookie NFL player on the team's active list earns a minimum salary of $495,000 in 2019, the average career lasts 3.3 years, according to NFL Players Association, especially for a running back. So we consider professional athletes to be high-risk clients in the sense that depending on the sport they play, they may have a short window for earning. And that's a statement by David Lopez, who's a CPA and member of the American Institute of CPAs. So they say if they've won $10 million, that person's head is spinning. He said, they've never been versed in handling that money. So before I get back to it, so let's talk about that. Financial literacy. Financial literacy means whether you have a small income, a nice income, or a large income, being able to maintain, manage your money, and make your money make money for you. That's financial literacy. Financial literacy is not taught to us, especially young black men, young black athletes. Financial literacy, especially ones came up in the time that I come up, and even now, financial literacy isn't taught because those around us aren't financially literate. And so what we have to do now is start early in making sure that our athletes coming out of college or going into college have a sense of what financial literacy is and is actively practicing financial literacy. So us adults have to make sure that we're not sending our children out in the world unprepared to be successful and then wondering why the success that we wanted them to have is not happening. It's one thing to have a dream for your child, but it's another thing to prepare your child to be successful for that. And as a parent, you can have all the goddamn dreams you want for your child, but that don't mean it's going to actually happen, right? This is hard for me. I know I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a financial literacy guru. When I was young, my dad said, "Boy, save, boy, save, boy, save." But hell, I was like five. I wasn't listening to that shit. But my dad never taught us to save. So that's one thing I know I'm going to do when I become a father is teach my children how to save. Don't just vocalize it, but actually teach them how to save money, how to be financially literate. Teach them what investing is. Teach them the power of credit, the power of not even if you are in debt, what's the difference between good debt and bad debt. I know I read the book, and I'm going to say this like this. I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad because I've read it more than once, and I've downloaded the Rich Dad, Poor Dad PowerPoint that I use for myself in some of the classes that I give and for the kids around here. Like I said, I'm not going to say I'm a financial literacy guru, but I have learned some things and I do implement some things. I have made significant changes in my life. I have more money. My credit score is a whole lot better now. I'm able to do a lot more things now than I was able to do in the past because I'm making better moves financially, even though everything isn't where I want it to be, but it's better. But saying all this because before players get millions of dollars in their hands, they need to understand the power of money. Money is your employee. Money works for you. Money is a form of energy, a form of currency that we use to enhance our lives and get the things that we need. It's a tool of circulation. So we often look at money as something that we should just spend. And when you have that mindset like that, you're going to be broke. Like it was a documented 30 for 30 that broke that came out. It's a lot of information and articles. I read a couple years ago why athletes go broke, and it kind of broke that thing down. So having a lot of money doesn't mean that your financial woes are over. Sometimes gaining $100 million could mean that you now have $300 million more problems. I was looking at an interview, and this is not an athlete, but it's still a lot of money being lost by people who wasn't prepared in financial literacy. Saw an interview with T-Pain on the Breakfast Club, and he's talking about how he blew through $40 million. That's a lot. To blow through $40 million, that's a lot. But let me continue to read. So the NFL Players Association offers players access to financial professionals who sign up for its financial advisors program. How long has that happened? I don't know, but of course it's art, because that's what they have. So participating advisors may pay a $2,500 fee, have a minimum of 8 years of licensed experience, and must be a certified financial planner or a chartered financial analyst. However, advisors say that these requirements don't go far enough. Players must learn to vet or to sit down and break down all the information with their financial professionals on their own. And this statement by Robert Paligarini, he's a CFP and president of the Pacifica Wealth Advisors of Irvine, California. So what he's saying is that means digging up their details on the financial industry, regulatory authorities, brokers, check website, and Securities and Exchange Commission investment advisors search site, doing your research on the people who are claiming to be your financial advisor. That's one thing T-Pain said. Bad investments through financial advisors, who supposed financial advisors who wasn't as literate as they thought they were, right? Researching an advisor's background is only the beginning. Players should make sure advisors hold clients' assets at a custodian. The advantage of keeping money at a custodian is that the custodian sends monthly statements to the client, said Paligarini, who works with athletes and other sudden wealth. And also other sudden wealth clients. But athletes have to also understand that these people work for you. You know what I'm saying? These people work for you. That's your employee. Your financial advisor is your employee. They, finances may be their expertise, but they still work for you. And you make the final statements. Do your homework. Do your research. Can't just be throwing your money at things just because you have it. So even Oprah, I remember listening to something Oprah said, like she has to have final say on everything financially that goes out. So it goes to this statement, and I said that because this statement by Paligarini is, you don't want the advisor to have full access to the asset. You're only going to have the access that I give you. You're not going to have full access to my finances. That's not good. I don't have full access to your finances, and you work for me. Think about that. Your employee, well, you don't have full access to your employee's financial records, and they work for you. So they shouldn't have full access to your financial record. It also says athletes must also make sure that their advisors, accountants, and attorneys are all serving in their best interest, right? only hire accredited fiduciaries. I messed this word up. Only hire accredited fiduciaries, said Jordan Waxman, a certified financial planner and managing partner for the HSW Advisors in New York. Have a team of fiduciaries. You fiduciary looking at boy. So this is also saying a common trap for professional athletes is to have one individual oversee all their money, including their investments and their regular monthly flow of cash. By having a team approach, an investment advisor, an attorney, and an accountant, for instance, athletes can compartmentalize their finances. In this manner, they can also build a system of checks and balances so that no one professional has full control over the assets and income. So let's imagine that an athlete's monthly expenses are $25,000 a month, said Pellegrini. I'm messing this man. I'm going to call him Pellegrini. The advisor can set it up so that $25,000 transferred from the investment account to the checking account, and that business manager can use to pay bills. That checking account will have no more than $25,000 in it at any given time. So anybody who have access to that specific account can't take out no more than $25,000. And then you want receipts on everything. You want everything that's happening in writing. If not, you're going to find yourself in this position. Adrian Peterson, and this is not to beat up on Adrian Peterson, but it's to shine more light on the lack of financial literacy that professional athletes have. Adrian Peterson is just one of many professional athletes who've been taken advantage of. As a matter of fact, Adrian Peterson is one of many people who come into large sums of money who've been taken advantage of by those who have more financial literacy, and they get them. You got Debo. So budgeting long-term wealth begins with the fundamentals, including budgeting. $1 million isn't really $1 million. So let's think about how to budget and what the goals will be as far as savings and what you can afford. This is what Lopez is saying. Athletes must be mindful of income taxes as well as gift taxes. The levy they'll need to pay for gifts they've made in excess of $15,000 annual exclusion per reception. Taxes are like holes in the rowboat, said Waxman. You can keep going and row to the middle of the lake, but eventually you'll end up full of water and the boat will sink. After setting aside money to cover taxes and paying the bills, advisors need to address clients' investments for the future. Lopez recommends that his rookie athlete clients put away 12% to 15% of their paychecks, investing it for long term. Athletes' wealth makes them a target for elaborate real estate deals, limited partnerships, and other illiquid investments. Don't invest in that bar or that nightclub, said Pellegrini. Stick to exchange trade funds or ETFs and mutual funds. There's plenty of money to be made without doing these esoteric black box investments. Now, I know that a lot of people look at real estate because, you know, real estate is hot right now. Especially with social media and everything, real estate is out there. Everybody, real estate this, real estate that. Real estate is important. So you have to make the correct real estate investments. And if you don't make the correct real estate investments, then you find yourself having issues with your money, being like Adrian Peterson. In debt, he's in serious debt. I can't substantiate it, but I read something earlier in the week that was saying $50 million in debt. That might not be correct. Now, we'll go on record and say that might not be correct, but I saw something, and I read something earlier in the week that was saying around $50 million in debt, and that's a lot of money, too. That's a lot of money because Adrian Peterson made a lot. Right? So financial literacy still comes down to you learning how to make the best or do more with the money that you have. There's several books. Read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Read The Millionaire Next Door. Read The Millionaire Mindset. Right? Those are three books that I would recommend that people read to help maintain their financial literacy. Any book that you can find to help you become more literate when it comes to money, read it, read it, read it, read it. We have YouTube now. You can watch YouTube all day on financial literacy. Now, one of the issues may come by is conflicting information. But nevertheless, that's when you sift through the information and ask questions to get around professionals financial professionals who will be able to help you, accountants, CPAs, all these different people. You want to find these different people and be able to create friendships with them, create relationships with them, so that you can be on top of your finances. Because if you're not on top of your finances, you're going to get taken advantage of. I'm sad to see this happen to Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson is one of my favorite running backs to watch in the history of NFL. You know, being able to watch him from a freshman at Oklahoma to where he is now to basically the twilight of his career. He had a pretty solid season last year. But the financial thing is an issue. He's had several issues. Well, I ain't say several issues. They had an issue, you know, with the discipline of his son, with the beating his son, leaving marks on him, as well as some of the injuries. Now he has this financial issue, which he's in the news for. So hopefully everything gets worked out. I hope everything gets worked out for Adrian Peterson, and I pray that everything gets back on track and he can earn more money and do more. Because he's in a position to, get as much money as possible. So. And then, but that go back to the holdout between like Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott. We don't want professional athletes to hold out, right? But then when a professional athlete gets short end of the stick, you say, well, it's their fault. Now, in this instance, Adrian gave himself the short end of the stick. But still, if you have a chance to get your money, you're a running back or any professional athlete or any professional, you got a chance to get your money, you fight for your money. Because you never know what things can happen. You never really know if those things can happen. So just be sure to understand the importance of financial literacy. Financial literacy is big. So this is the story with Adrian Peterson. This is what he got going on. So I would encourage you to do your research and learn more about what's going on with Adrian Peterson, because it's another chapter in the books that goes to show how professional athletes can earn large amounts of money over time, but still be in a position to where they're in major debt and possibly go broke over the years. So that's that. All right, so let's move on. It's time to move on because it's now time for our Life After Sports segment. And for those who are new to the podcast, this Life After Sports segment, I created this because I want current athletes and future athletes to understand that sports is a means to an end. It's not the end. And so I'm excited about this interview today because I have a gentleman on the podcast today for the Life After Sports segment. I'm a Tallahassean. I'm a first generation Tallahassean, second generation FAMUan, and in my household, the name Albert Chester is synonymous with Walter Payton. It's synonymous with Emmitt Smith. It's synonymous with Jerry Rice because Albert Chester Sr. was a football legend at FAMU, but the legacy continued. So his son, Dr. Albert Chester II, who is a native of Jacksonville, Florida, is a former quarterback for the Florida A&M Rattler football team, and he has successfully created a life after sports for himself. And I'm excited about this interview that I can have him on. So I want all of you to get up and put your hands together for Dr. Albert Chester II. Y'all put your hands together. Dr. Chester, how you doing this morning, my brother?
Man, you got me fired up, man. That sounds like Orlando. That sounds like the Florida Classic.
Yes, sir. I had to bring it down. I had to try to get my best Joe Bullock going on.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So, yo, man, how you doing today?
I'm great, man. I'd like to welcome you. I thank you for taking time out of your day for coming on this podcast to be able to tell your story, give information. And I kind of want to do this also to praise you and other athletes, former athletes that I've interviewed, because I think you have a key to success within our community and also within our athletic community, and not, like I said earlier, not looking at sports as the end, but it's a means to an end. So,
right,
thank you.
Right. Absolutely. Hey, I'm glad to be here, always glad to share. Honored that you even thought so much to have your boy on. So, hey, anytime.
Man, no problem. There's definitely no problem. So just kind of want to go ahead and get into it, man, because I know who you are. I know about your background. I don't know everything, but I know who you are because, like I said, the name is in my house forever. So can you give our listeners some background information about yourself and how you got introduced to football?
Okay. Well, of course, native to Jacksonville. Mom was Miss FAMU in 1980 at Florida A&M. Okay. And, of course, Dad did his thing at FAMU. And, I mean, a lot of people really don't get it because, you know, so much time has gone. I mean, it's going on 40 years. It's been 40 years. But the significance of that was I learned at an early age that was the first and still only HBCU to win a NCAA-sanctioned national championship. And even though Florida State would have, you know, two or three national championships on the books, FAMU was the first, I want to say, probably in the state of Florida, to win an NCAA national championship on the field. Not a coach's poll, not a, you know, press, you know, AP press national championship. So that was big and monumental in itself, and it always will be, because you're talking about all the sports, from volleyball, softball, baseball, basketball, everything. So that was huge, and that gave me a lot of motivation. And, you know, I'm a history buff and a local guy with where I find my motivation. And knowing those players after seeing the highlight tapes, because, of course, it was tapes back then. It was reels. It was kind of funny. But they converted the tapes. Now they have it to a DVD. But my first heroes were my dad's teammates, from Ike Williams to Tyrone McGriff to, I mean, the list just goes on. Spanky Ramsey, I mean, looking at Coach Hubbard, how people look at, you know, Bill Walsh or Bill Belichick. Right. You know, that before I knew about them, I knew about Rudy Hubbard and Coach Bogan and Coach Munge and all those guys. So that instilled a different type of motivation. And then actually to be able to talk to those guys, you know what I mean? Because it wasn't no YouTube and no Facebook and all that stuff then. So we didn't have access to our stars or our heroes like they have access to them now, you know, as far as Twitter. Right. So that instilled a drive and a fire in me to want to compete and to want to excel. And then how I took the concept of football and wanted to translate that into life. And as a younger athlete, I would kind of fall out of friendship with some of my teammates because I couldn't understand or couldn't articulate at that time how can you be competitive on a field where this is just a game and not be competitive in real life.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So you strive to be great on one end, but you don't strive to be great in every aspect of your life. And understanding football, like Coach Hubbard, my dad, Coach Bogan, I would always hear them talk, and they would talk to me as a youngster growing up and say, you know, football is a microcosm of life. You know what I mean? You can take the same skills and what you develop as far as a mindset and apply those to life. And just like you said before, you use football to open doors for you. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it just made sense to go to Florida A&M on a football scholarship, and you go major in one of the top-notch programs, which at the time was pharmacy, because you get to do it for free.
Right.
You know what I mean? When classmates and friends are coming out with tens or sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt, I was able to play football, which I love, you know, have some relative success, and then go to school for free and get a pharmacy degree. You know, it's like the perfect marriage, but you have to take advantage of that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I try to get as many people, you know, if you're not an athlete, that's fine. But, I mean, whatever, just take advantage of your opportunities and take advantage of things that can be an experience and can open some doors for you.
Exactly.
You know.
But your words are powerful, not just for the athletes, but for those who support the athletes, because I created this segment and with the thought of these young men that I used to counsel at a summer camp. The young man was 12 years old. And his family at that point was expecting him to save the family through athletics. And he's 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot to put on a 12-year-old who is not even on a high school team. You know, he hasn't even made it to that level. But it's just, that's why your words are so powerful, because it reaches the athlete, but all those who support the athlete, so they can understand that it doesn't end here. Like, it's a whole world full of opportunities out here, and as you articulated, football can help open up those doors.
Exactly, and you use that to leverage different things. I mean, it's opportunities. Like just talking to friends and even some mentors from Jacksonville. I mean, I talked to a guy. He went and played with Donovan McNabb and played running back. Was on scholarship, and now he's a vice principal and about to be a principal and working and finishing up his PhD. And he was like, "Dude, like, I came from pretty much nothing, but because I was an athlete, I was able to go to a school like Syracuse, which at the time it cost $50,000 a year to go there." It's no way in the world I would have went there on what my mom was making, because I had two or three, three brothers and a sister or something like that. So he leveraged his opportunity and took advantage of it. You know what I mean? And it goes back to when you think logically about, like, what you can control. You know what I mean? Like, I heard you talking about Adrian Peterson, and you have, superstars, Cam Newton. I mean, but if you think about it, you have more people that's not superstars than people that are. Like, those people are highlighted, but they're one in already a select few. I mean, you literally have a better chance of getting struck by lightning twice than having a Tom Brady-like career in the NFL.
Right.
And you can't control that. You're fighting for someone to see your talent, and you hope that they want to develop it, or they hope they want to use you in their plans. But my thing is, you can control being a big-time lawyer. You can control if you work on Wall Street. You control if you want to be a surgeon. You control your destiny with that. You know what I mean? But when you're vying to be on someone's team, you're hoping that they see something in you that you believe that you have. You know what I mean? It's so much left to chance. And what people don't realize is that when you're 12, they're looking for teams. They're looking for people to join a team on a Pop Warner team. When you get to middle school, they're still kind of looking for some players. In high school, you have tryouts. In college, to get to college is even more difficult because they got a team full of players, but those players are leaving, so they can need some people to replace them. But in NFL, those teams are full. They ain't looking for nobody. They're looking to get some people out of the way that may be playing on a 80% average. Now they're looking for somebody to play 90%, and it's going to always be looking. They're always going to be like that. The Jaguars not short any players. know what I mean? The Cowboys not short of any players, so that means you're going to take somebody's job.
Exactly. Yeah.
How difficult is that? Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to let anybody take my job. So I'm with you.
Exactly. Exactly. So then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you framed it like that, because I want to kind of construct the story, because I want people to understand the process of high school and collegiate athletes and moving on. So this question is, can you kind of give the listeners an idea of where you play high school football, the success you had in high school, and when you first noticed colleges recruiting you, or when colleges first start recruiting you?
Okay, well, I graduated from Episcopal High School, private school in Jacksonville, and at the time we were, I think, 2, maybe 3A, and was able to go to the playoffs for the first time in the school history, and then we had some more success later, my junior and senior year. But I first started noticing colleges start recruiting when I was in 10th grade because of the success in the different camps I was attending. Like, it's a whole different setup now. I mean, these kids have platforms, and they can be checked out, all the way early as 8th grade. So it started way back then, and, just talking to different coaches and measuring – weighing out the options. And what came down to help me make my final decision was, because I visited Vanderbilt, had a commitment to Stanford at one point, Air Force Academy, University of Utah, Urban Meyer was out there. But a lot of them wanted me to change my position. I really went down with that, and that's a whole, that could be a whole other segment. But what made me make my decision was, if I always kept in the back of my mind that football was an experience. It would be great, and it would be a dream to play in the NFL, and you're going to work hard, you're going to strive to do that, but you can't hang your hat on that. Like, what helped me make my final decision in going to FAMU, outside, of course, the influence of my family, was if football was to stop, which unfortunately it did for me before I was able to complete my eligibility, if football was to end, would I enjoy being at Vanderbilt University? Would I enjoy being at University of Utah if football was to be taken out of the picture? And the answer was no, everywhere else I went except FAMU. Okay. You know what I mean? And that was the part that pushed me over the edge, that made FAMU, that outweighed everybody else on that, and tilted
tilted the pendulum towards Florida A&M because I knew I could get a cultural experience. I knew I would enjoy myself, and I knew I wasn't too far from home. But right. if football was to be taken away, I knew I could enjoy my time in college. And not saying that you couldn't anywhere else, but I knew what I wanted and needed at that time, and that was to be at a place where if football was to be over, would I still be okay and not be homesick? So that was the thing that got me.
Okay. And was pharmacy the major that you chose going into college, or is that something you found while you were at FAMU?
Well, and that leads into, you know, what I talk about towards the end of, you know, this question, but I wanted to be a teacher, man. I always enjoyed teaching, like teaching someone how to do something, because I believe that always that changed their mind, and teachers are, you know, vital. I mean, mothers are the first teachers. Fathers are also teachers. Everybody, if you come in contact, just like what you were saying with mentors, if you're a teacher, you're instructing. And I wanted to be a teacher, but my mom, she's been a teacher now for about 40 years. She was like, look, babe, teachers don't make any money. Right. And you have a passion, and when you're young, you're like, what's that? I wanted to make some money, and I wanted to help people.
Right.
And I had a couple cousins who had finished the pharmacy program and had some success, so went to the pharmacy program. And that's what made me do that, and just being, you know, competitive and driven to succeed, which has always been my thing, was able to finish the program. And once I got out, I still wanted to teach. I did a little coaching or whatever, and that's what made me start the Capstone Institute, where I teach people how to become pharmacy technicians. We train them, get them licensed and certified to become pharmacy technicians. So my passion has always been to help. Pharmacy ended up being my ministry and my platform to do that. So now I'm rolling into, I've been teaching. So getting back to still what I love to do. And doing a little coaching on the side, a little private independent coaching or whatever. So, yeah, that's the pretty much the story on the pharmacy tip.
That's amazing. And for those who don't know, FAMU has, I would say, the premier pharmacy program in the country. I know I've had the privilege to see it up close and personal, to get to know some of the professors and the students and see people go through the process. And it's not easy getting through that pharmacy program. So I have to give my hat off to you for being an athlete and getting to that pharmacy program and having the discipline to make sure you stay on top of what you need to stay on top of, because it's a hard process, because the pharmacy program demands a lot from you and the football team demands a lot from you. So how were you able to balance pharmacy and football?
Hey, man, with a lot of prayer, long nights. and just being somewhat of a loner and not being easily influenced by a lot of outside factors. I mean, I've always been very, very focused, and you know, when I talk to people, I just let them know every part of your life up until this point has prepared you for this point. So, starting Episcopal in sixth grade, I was the only black person in my class for about 4 years. So this is not just your individual class; this is your entire grade. And you know, I had some friends and things, but you get to a point where you realize that you're different. So it's an isolation and a lot of pressure that you feel by yourself. So either you focus or fold. You know what I mean? Personally to focus, and that pushed me along to be an individual, to see things and to move things according to how I saw fit. And if it didn't fit in the box of a certain group, that was okay, because I grew up and I was too black to be, you know, with the white kids all the time, and too white to be with my black friends all the time too. So I was moving solo. So having that attitude of the one man show, and not being selfish or anything like that, but just that's what allowed me to stay focused, because I knew at some point I couldn't hang out with the football players because I had to go study. And then at other times I knew at some time I couldn't hang out with the pharmacy kids because I had to go play ball. You know what I mean? Right. So I was able to move and go back and forth. And then sometimes I couldn't be with either one of them because it was other stuff that I needed to do.
But
a lot of prayer, man.
That is great, because one of the important things is you know who you are, and you wasn't easily influenced by outside forces, and you were okay with being who you are. That's powerful.
Yeah, and you know, and I tell people, and that's the same thing. I didn't miss out. I felt anything. I joined a great fraternity, became a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, Alpha Z, and Spring 05. So it was a lot of stuff I still was able to do, But it was just my life was my path was narrow, and I was good with that.
Right.
You know, I find comfort in doing habits and stuff every day, and just when I talk to folks, just giving them some of the jewels that I developed or some of the things I've heard, and just dropping it in their ear. Just like, you know, I listened to Miles Monroe, and he was saying that your habits determine your future.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And to be successful, there's a level of discipline and commitment that you must have and that you can't get around. So looking at somebody like a Michael Jordan, his commitment was almost sick. You know what I'm saying? He's like obsessed with doing stuff. Tom Brady, it's an obsession. But then at the same time, looking at somebody like a George Washington Carver or a Thurgood Marshall, knowing what those guys had to go through and knowing the level of discipline and focus that they had to have. You know what I mean? So it wasn't just MJ or Kobe or, you know, Montana that influenced me. I was influenced by knowing that history, going back to being a history buff, the Thurgood Marshalls, the George Washington Carvers. I mean, the transcendent athlete, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and not just knowing them for a speech or for a certain period of time, but Marcus Garvey. You know what I'm saying? That determined the type of determination those cats have, that's that real life stuff to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's the real life stuff, because I mean, we have thousands of professional black athletes, but how many black surgeons do we have? How many black lawyers do we have that's affecting and fighting real life issues? When you see, you know, the injustice from the police, when you are a healthcare provider, and you see how they talk about healthcare disparities, but we don't have black people on the front lines or in positions to fight and help our people, or any type of minority for that extent, because in my pharmacy, we service all races, all people. We have a lot of minorities, of course, black and brown minorities, but we don't have enough people standing up and fighting for the majority.
I agree.
And those guys are my heroes. So that focus and all that stuff, not wasn't just from MJ, it was knowing real life folks that went through that stuff. So.
Yeah, but that's man, that's powerful. That's great, because I'm a fellow history buff. Like anybody tell you, Harriet Tubman. You ask me who my favorite figures, Harriet Tubman be one of the first names that come out of my mouth.
Yes, sir.
To look at what she did, talking about facing adversity and having that wherewithal within you. So I'm right there with you, because we need to know our past. We need to understand our past. We need to understand the people who make significant contributions, whether it's in athletics or outside of athletics. But even within the realm of athletics, we sometimes don't know about some of the black athletes or black executives who've made great strides over the years, over the past 70, 60, 70 years, who've done great things, whether on the field or off the field. Ozzie Newsome with the Baltimore Ravens. Somebody like him was a pioneer. So it's that aspect is definitely needed when it comes to sports, because I just think we have such a narrow view when it comes to athletics. Like, we can only be athletes, and it's a whole world. I always tell kids, because, you know, you have a kid who say, I want to play football or basketball so I can get rich and buy my mom my house. I don't have a problem with that. But then I ask them, is that all you want to do? Yeah. But who make more money, the owner or the players? You know,
right.
So being able to look at things like that, if it's all about money, you might want to be an owner.
Yeah. Or, you know, what happens is, I mean, the dynamics of the whole deal, and this is not knocking anybody or this is not calling anybody unintelligent or stupid, but the sad part is all we know as a people, especially being middle class all the way down to poor folks, the majority of people only know how to spend money. You know what I mean? But don't understand how to make that money work for you. I mean, you get a signing bonus of $20 million or $14, $15 million. What's wrong with taking half of that and just let that sit somewhere? And then later on, you learn how to make that grow for you. But now all we know is how to spend, and everybody's pulling on us. But that's when it comes in, where you need that mentor, or when you know yourself. You know what I mean? Or you know, you have that knowledge of others who have come before you. But just going back to, like you say, Harriet Tubman, to know that story, that does so much for so many people on so many different levels. Like, that's going to affect me and you differently than it's going to affect that girl who has to walk home from school after catching the bus because her mom was working You know what I mean? Who's got to walk home by herself. She, when she gets down, when she wants to do something, she's like, you know what? Harriet Tubman walked hundreds of miles multiple times to go save some people. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to inspire her in a different way. And at different times, it's going to inspire you as a child, as a teenager, and as an adult. You know, you think of all the times when it might get difficult, you want to quit, but you're talking about, man, this lady went back multiple times. I mean, literally, people were trying to kill her, risking her life to go back and save folks, and you can't get athletes to come to the hood and donate $100,000 to get some computers and get a STEM program going for some kids, and that's where the future's going. Exactly. You ain't risking your life. You getting a tax write-off for doing this, and you helping some kids. You changing the trajectory of their life. And if, you know, Kobe Bryant tells me to do this, I'm going to remember for the rest of my life Kobe Bryant told me to do this. And you know what? Exactly. It's possible. I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
I'm going to do it.
Yes, sir. So now I want to ask this question because I like to ask this question because I just want more information out so people can understand. And this is based off of my own experience. Coming out of high school, I attempted to play football at FAMU, but I was not prepared at all. I had no idea what clearinghouse was. So that was a holdup. And, you know, clearinghouse can be something else if you have no idea what's going on.
Right, that's the police.
Exactly. So with that being said, what are some commonly unknown things that parents and athletes should know about playing like high school and collegiate sports to kind of help them be successful and not get kind of swept away in the system?
What they need to do, parents and students, is understand what your core classes are and make sure you've successfully taken and passed those core classes, and then understanding what you need to make on the SAT or the ACT in order to get cleared through the clearinghouse. Because if you're not doing either one of those, I mean, you just wasting your time. So that's when it comes to, you know, when parents want to get mad at the coach about my son not playing, make sure you talk to that guidance counselor and your son or your daughter is taking the right courses so they can be cleared and ready to go when they get the opportunity, if and when, or even if they don't get the opportunity to play ball. So, you know, I was reading something. It was saying, you know, we could get half the parents to show up on Saturdays for part one of games to show up on Tuesday for PTA meetings.
That's a cold
slap in the face.
That's a big
pill of truth. But it's a suit that belly full of false hope and lies, man. That's the God honest truth, because like it goes back to, dude, you can control the outcome. You know what I mean?
You go
through school, you can control those grades, make all A's, do well, study hard. You can go be that lawyer. And nobody can stop that. Nobody can control that. Right. But that owner for the Minnesota Vikings can say, hey, you know what? Bring me your playbook and clean out your locker. And you did everything right. I know friends.
Right.
I got friends just like that. That's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, you know, with football, you know, now they sign scholarships annually. When we signed a scholarship, it was for the whole four years. But let's say, you know, you're in a predicament and you've let, you know, Nick Saban down. And you know, Bobby John from Gaston County, and like, hey, who they gonna take? Who do they care about? Nick Saban? They care about you from Gaston County. They care about Nick Saban, so they gonna pull that scholarship from you.
Right.
Now you stuck like Chuck. Got to come back home.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's the name of the game.
That's real. Being prepared. Like, I love it when I'm talking to parents of athletes now, and they're saying, all right, well, my son or daughter's in the ninth grade, and we're preparing to take the ACT or the SAT this year. We're going to start early. That's great. I know. I took mine my 12th grade year, and I had to take it, like, twice my 12th grade year, something like that. But I was totally unprepared for college athletics, like, totally unprepared. And it just didn't happen for me. But I see a lot of people who have the potential, and also looking at athletes that I came out with who we just knew was going to make it to the NFL because they were just that good, but life happened, being unprepared, all these different things. But when it goes back to what you were saying, they were also in realms where they didn't really have much control over what was going to happen to them because they didn't know that they could have more control. Mm-hmm. That's important. That's important.
Yeah, and you know the thing about it is like with everything, it's, I've been just moving on conviction, moving on prayer and conviction, and it's just unfortunate how the system, and that's I'm bringing full circle, and forgive me if I'm being long winded, but
yeah, you're right.
I think about this stuff on a daily, how the system in our country is set up to buy and sell and pimp desperation and poverty.
Yeah.
Because you put these people in front of my face that look like me, and you make me think that's the only way I can be successful. True enough, these are entertainers. That's what entertainers mm-hmm. do. But at the same time, that's the only way I think I can make it. And that's just simply not the case. And when you're desperate, you do anything. And just like you said, I mean, why would you put so much pressure on somebody who's not even a teenager at 12 years old? He knows that he got to try to do this for mama. He got to try to do this for the whole family. But what is mama doing? What are my brothers and sisters doing? What are the people who walked before me, what are they doing to let me know that it's another way? Because, like you said, we've heard, and you see the story too much, that you got superstars, and you was like, man, this dude is all world. And by the time you get our age now, you're like, man, what this dude doing? Ain't nobody heard or seen from it. Or unfortunately, I mean, he made it and didn't, and wasn't successful, and now he didn't finish with a degree. And he may be trying to take some classes to finish a degree or whatever, but it's just the story just becomes a sad, sad story.
Yeah,
and we got to get out of the mold. Yeah, we got to get out of the mold for that. So, you know, what I try to do and try to preach on both ends, as far as the kids and as far as the professional folks that I know, and then even some of the people in the league that I know, it's like you got to come back and have these real conversations with these kids about everything, because they're going to listen to a Jalen Ramsey. They're going to listen to a Leonard Fournette. They're going to listen to Antonio Cromartie. You know, and even people that are still very, very relevant, because those guys are the first two I named are relevant, with Crow, about the same age, he's been out of the league, but those guys got to come back to talk. And then the dentist who made it out. You know, I talked to a guy, I'm in the heart of the city in Jacksonville, and this dude literally, he left Jacksonville, joined the military, went to Oklahoma, made a freaking mint. This dude has a logistic company. Cool guy. I mean, he just wanted to meet and talk to me. We're friends now. He's from right around the corner where my story is. And in the area that I'm at, the average annual income is $12,000 a year.
Wow.
$12,000 for the entire year where I am as far as the pharmacy and the school. And I'm like, man, you got to come back and talk to these kids. You got to come back and talk to these kids, because they see me. And you know, they think one thing, but I mean, shit, I'm a small business struggling business. You know what I'm saying? Like every day is an everyday struggle, but they need to see people they can relate to, because truthfully, I had a two parent home. I grew up, life was relatively easy for me, and I tried to do everything right. So for me to tell them to do things is one thing, because there's some stuff I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, but I encourage, I mean, I got friends all over. I'm like, dude, you need to come back to the crib. We could throw something, put something together, and you just talk to that girl or that guy that's sitting on those steps in the projects, because you used to be that person. And you could tell them, this is where I used to live. You live right here. This is where I used to live. But you can make it. You can get out of here. And it's like with everything that I'm moving, it's a conviction. I even wear this hat. It's the anti-Donald Trump hat. Because he got the MAGA hat, but mine is hashtag is possible. Hashtag is possible. We're gonna get that. We get that copyrighted. But all in all, if people don't ever remember anything about me, I just want people to feel like he inspired me to think that it's possible. You know, to me, that stretches across the board for people who middle class, who would be considered lower class in poverty, is possible. You know what I'm saying? When people in the pharmacy program say, look, you're going to have to choose between football and pharmacy, I say, no, because it's possible. I'm going to be able to do both. Even the football coach said, hey, man, you might have to make a choice. I say, no, it's possible. You know what I'm saying? In every hard time in your life, if you didn't even know that you could do it, if you just simply said it's possible and just said that in your head every day, five times, it's possible. Man, I don't know how I'm going to make it. It's possible. I don't know how I'm going to get this degree. It's possible. I don't know how I'm going to do such and such. It's possible. The doctors ain't looking good for mama. Hey, we're going to get mama some food. We're going to get her some medicine, get her all this stuff, and it's possible she's going to make it. It's possible. That's what, man, if I could cook that up and serve it to everybody, I know I sell medicine, I sell medication. If I could cook that up and just sell it's possible, keep moving, man. It's possible.
There you go.
It's possible.
There you go. So I want to expound on that because you are an entrepreneur now. And they tried to get you to veer off the path. They tried to get you to come to this school and not play quarterback. Or I'm at this school and they want you to spend all your time doing this. But you carved out your own path and you were headstrong enough to say, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm doing. And now you're an entrepreneur. So can you kind of elaborate on, say the name of your business again, what you do, and how you started your business?
Okay. Just going back to just having that, it goes back to knowing your history, knowing who you are, knowing whose you are, in order to gain that strength to believe in yourself, and then studying the Jerry Rices, the Michael Jordans, the Walter Paytons, and even people like my dad or Coach Hubbard, and going back to like the Billy Joes, man, just having that confidence and that strength within. And I just took that from the football field since I wasn't playing no more and applied that to real life, and it just goes back. And I preach it and I say it time and time again, man, you have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. You have to believe in yourself. That's where your future is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
People dump negativity on it and they kind of bury it, but your future, your everything is inside of you. I mean, I don't know if we have some atheists that's listening or people don't believe in God, but say this, I mean, I believe in the universal God, and everybody has a piece of the universal God inside. And when you make something, that's a part of you. You know what I mean? So when you understand who you are on this earth, like where you come from, especially being African American, and the success that we've had and the things that overcome, and then circling back to not just being the African American or the black race, but the human race, all of us got God in us, and it's about us trying to get it out of us. And everybody else is just decoration and scenery, but you got to get it out of you, no matter what they say. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the naysayers came from my family. You know, naysayers, of course, came from outsiders. But it's always been knowing who you are and whose you are helped me push through and want to be successful and start a business and start a movement where, you know, you get to the point where you feel like, you know, you're unstoppable. All of us are energy beings. So I just try to block out the negative energy or even use it. You know, I was making an analogy. I said, you know, you need to be a battery. And anybody know about the function of a battery, you got to have you got to have two type of charges. You got to have a negative charge and a positive charge.
There you go.
So you got to be able to use both. You know, because too much positivity, the battery don't work. Too much negative energy, the battery still won't work. So there's a balance. There's a balance to it. And I was able to harness both energies, the balance. And really move forward. So the people who said not to do it or you can't do it, that was the negative energy that motivated me to want to do it even more just because you said I couldn't. And then you take the positive energy, people rooting you on, and not take too much of it, but say, you know what? It's a kid, it's a mom, it's a dad, it's an older person that's watching me, and I got to do it for them. Not just for mama, but I got to do it for them because if they see I did it, that's going to let them at least reference me or believe that they can do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you take all that, the good with the bad, man, and you just push that thing forward after finding yourself and figuring out what you want to be and how you want to affect this world. How do you want to be remembered? How do you want to leave that legacy? And, you know, I mean, it's thinking further down the road, but when you find, like I said, you're doing this podcast, it's because you obviously, you love to do it. This is your calling for right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
We don't know where this may take you, but right now this is your conviction. So my conviction, I mean, I wanted to be a great football player. I tried my best. Hey, everything enrolled how I wanted to, but it evolved into being a pharmacist, then it evolved into being an entrepreneur, then it evolved, you know, owning a school, evolved owning their own pharmacy. Now it's evolved into wanting to represent an entire district that stretches, you know, a couple hundred miles in the U.S. Congress. Like, I've never thought about being you know what I mean? I never thought about doing that, but it's been the conviction. They've just been rolling and rolling, and that momentum is just starting to feed on itself. Because, I referenced some of the talks and the speeches that I had. Like, when I went to get my license for the school, like, Capstone is a post-secondary career training program. So we're what Kaiser is. We're what Everest used to be. Okay. We're what Virginia College and Heritage. So I go to get my license at UT Tech. We're in the same category with them. I go get my license, and they have a team of people. ITT got a team of people. Heritage, all these people got a team of people, 4, 5, 6, 7 people coming up to the podium to present. And when it's Capstone Institute, I'm going up there by myself. And they're like, well, where's your team? You know, you seem to be by yourself. I said, well, in the words of the 20th century poet James Brown, I said, I'm the show and the business. He's like, well, okay, sir. And then I also said, I mean, I'm not up here by myself. It's just a person, the being that's with me. You don't see it. And you don't have to. And you know, they approved the school, and the rest was history. But taking that confidence up there with me, you know, and never likening myself to a David or Abraham or Joseph or any of those guys in the Bible, or even like a Ruth or an Esther. But what they had was they had that faith. And they believe. And what that does is that gives you a amount of momentum that it just feeds on itself to you, and to the point that you get so excited where you literally believe it's nothing that you can't do. And then I tell people, and then here's the flip when you know it's of God. You know it's of God when I don't have to make you feel little to make myself feel great. I feel great because I know who's in me. And guess what? It's so I wanted to be infectious. So when we talk, when we deal, I want the person that cut my grass to have – I had the same conversation I have with him that I'll have with somebody who I'm trying to do a business deal with, because I know that you're just as great as I am. And if anything, hopefully I can pull that out of you. So you never look down on anybody or make people feel bad like Donald Trump will do or people like that, because that's not of God. When it's of God, we build everybody up. Man, I want your podcast to blow up for so many more reasons. Just cause we done had this conversation. Just cause I know about it.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And anybody else I deal with, if you cut grass, if you sell ice cream, shoot, I hope you have 1,000 trucks. Get your storefront. Right. Or shoot, start selling on Amazon. Figure out how to freeze some ice cream and flip it and sell it all around the country. You know what I'm saying? So
that's
what you want, because your success is my success. My success is your success, because who knows that, you know, someday I may have to help you, you may have to help me, or we may just get together and shoot, man, we can have a health podcast. You own a freaking station. You're like, hey, you know, doc, you want to do such and such? Hey, I can't do it right now, but I got another pharmacist who want to do it too, so I'm putting somebody else in the game. You know what I mean? But it's that momentum, man. It just gets powerful, and I think it's a time for that now. You know, with people being scared to go to Walmart, with the way life is going, I mean, this artificial intelligence, I mean, we're losing that human touch.
That
human touch.
And that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, why we create this network, and just things I do on a regular basis in my community, whatever it's that. And human interaction, man, you can never get around that. Like us as human beings, we have to know that if we aren't working together, if we aren't uplifting each other, we aren't supporting each other, all these different things, then we won't be successful. You have to have the help from others to be successful. You have to have others who are willing to buy into what you're doing. If I'm selling hot dogs, if somebody buy my hot dogs, I'm not going to be as successful. So I got to create some kind of lane of workmanship and just friendship with other people so they know. And then try to be a man of my word. If I say I'm going to do something for somebody, do it. And do it with all the energy and conviction that I have in my body, as if I was doing it for myself. So I'm definitely there with you. Yes, sir.
Right.
So,
yes,
sir. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I remember I had an aunt. She said She said something, it was like, I can remember it. She said, whatever the task, big or small, give it your best or don't do it at all. Real simple. You know what I'm saying? Old folks had some simple stuff. She said, no matter the task, big or small, give it your best or don't do it at all.
That ain't hard.
She was like, she said, if you're going to sweep the flow, you better be the best. That flow needs to sparkle when you're done.
Yep.
And it's no matter who you're doing it for.
When I growing up, my mom used to post sticky notes all around the house that had different quotes and different things, universal laws, all these different things. But it was one that said, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Mm.
And what's ironic about that is later on, like let's say 2-3 years later, I was working at the Goodwill, and I actually came across a whole book that was just that, how you do anything is how you do everything. And that's something that stuck with me for a long time. So it just reinforces what you're saying by having full conviction, like do it and do it to your best, because you never know. You sweeping floors today with all of that vigor, sweeping the floors today could lead to a multi-million-dollar janitorial business later. So you never know. You got to give your best.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing, you know, that I get scared when I think about the kids now, even myself when I talk to them about not missing out on opportunities. You know what I mean? Don't say no to any opportunity, because, mm-hmm. you know, if your teacher say, hey, you need to go to this conference or do this or such and such, maybe like, go ahead and do it. You never know who you might meet that could change your life just like that. Or something you may hear that's going to change your life just like that. Oh, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going that. Man, don't say no. If it's not going to kill you, it's not putting you in danger, man, go ahead and do it. Because you just never know. And, yeah, I see too many young people just, no, I'm not doing that. That look boring. Just try it.
Right.
Just try it.
It might be boring, but just do it.
I mean, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to kill you, because you may learn something in that one instance that could save your life, and that's the only reason you were supposed to go there.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. I learned that the hard way, but I learned it.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, boy, life will get you like that, boy. And it's just dissecting life, man, and looking at it through the right lens, and not the lens that they want you to look at it through.
Right.
You know, having your own vision.
There you go. There you go. So, getting to the point about to wrap this up, because we could talk. I can see both of us. We could sit here and talk all day. But
I'm sorry, man. I know you probably got time limit.
No, because there is no time limit with this. I just try to be respectful of other folks' time, but there is no time limit with this. But could you tell people the name of your businesses again, and how people can get in contact with you to learn more from you, to get you to come out and speak or to do business with you?
Okay. All right, well, right now I have Newtown Pharmacy located 3416 Moncrief Road in Jacksonville, Florida, Suite 101, and I also have the Capstone Institute, and we're starting up a new class on Monday. And that's a post-secondary career training program in which we train people to become pharmacy technicians. That's also located at 3416 Moncrief Road, but that's Suite 103, so they're pretty much a couple doors that separate themselves. And always willing to help. Share a good word when I can, help people out as far as their medication, as far as health care. And then also, too, I mean, just kind of shifting gears a little bit, moving towards the congressional race. I'll be running for U.S. Congress August of 2020, representing the 5th District. So that runs from Duval County all the way to Gaston County, up and down I-10. So
okay.
They'll see me. We'll be beating the streets. And talking to some folks and listening to their concerns, different things like that. So yeah, most definitely.
Okay, and what's your social media or your email?
The email is albertdchester2@yahoo.com. That's probably the best one to reach me at, because
okay.
I have a few around, but that'll get directly to me. I'm on Facebook, just Albert Chester. You can just find it, Albert
okay.
Chester. And then the Twitter. And I really got to get better at this Twitter thing, because I got somebody run my Twitter, but I want to say is that Albert Chester, just search Albert Chester on Twitter, man. I'm not 100% sure. I'm gonna get better on that, though. I'm definitely get better on that. But yeah, those two ways, two ways you can get me.
Not a problem. All right. And I definitely want to keep in contact with you. So when we get through with this later on, but I got some other things. But I'll email back and forth because I definitely want to keep in contact with you. Because I want to be able to. I have another show on this podcast, and I want to be able to bring you that around 2020 time when campaign things started. So because we want to be able to help you get the word out about your campaign and everything that you're doing. So you have got a platform that's willing to bring you on anytime you want to talk and be able to get your message out. So you're definitely welcome to use this platform. And I just want to be able to support you in everything that you do because I think you're a good brother. I've been able to I think I might have been gone. What year did you graduate from, FAMU?
The pharmacy program I graduated from in 2009.
Okay. Yeah, so I was gone from FAMU a couple years before you graduated from the pharmacy program, but I did get a chance to see you play ball. And like I said, I knew the background story of your father and everything. And I kind of feel like, man, kind of feel like you're part of the family because I've been hearing your name in the house all of my life. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I just want to extend that. Anything, anytime you need anything from us on this podcast, we're definitely here for you, my brother.
Oh man, no doubt, man. I appreciate it. Likewise, man. Like I said, I don't have too many friends, but I got a lot of family though.
There you go.
I appreciate it.
That's what matters. So
I appreciate it.
With that being said, my brother, I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna make sure we keep in contact, and I appreciate all of the information that you've given on this podcast. It was very powerful. It's very needed today. And I'm sure my audience is going to enjoy it, and they're probably going to be asking for you to come back. So we're going to keep these lines of communication open between us.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, man. Anytime, man. You got me.
All right. I thank you very much, my brother.
Okay, man. Have a good one.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Dr. Albert Chester II. Y'all put your hands together for Dr. Albert Chester II. That brother brought the information, brought the pain, brought the thunder. So that's what's up. Gentlemen like him need to be celebrated, and that's why this podcast network exists, and that's why this podcast exists, because gentlemen like him need to be celebrated. All right, man, so let's keep this thing moving. Let's move on like Maya so we can get the rest of these topics out the way but not rush through everything. So the NBA All-Decade 2010 team was released, and they had the first team, second team, third team. I don't necessarily agree with everything, but, yeah. So let's get into it. So first team, All-2010 Decade team, first team is Steph Curry, James Harden, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Kawhi Leonard. So that's the first team. Second team is Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, Blake Griffin, and Carmelo Anthony. Third team is Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, Paul George, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. First of all, Giannis shouldn't be on this team. If we're talking about all decade, all 2010s, Giannis Antetokounmpo shouldn't be on this team. We had, what, 2-3 years where he was actually great like that? Maybe 4? Maybe? He shouldn't be on this list. It's blasphemous for Dwayne Wade. It's blasphemous more so for Dwayne Wade than Kobe Bryant. I can understand the Kobe Bryant argument because Kobe been retired for a while. Kobe had a lot of injuries. The 2010s was the highlight of his career. Either don't put Kobe on this at all or at least put him second team. But the reason why I say it's kind of disrespectful, you got Chris Paul second team over him. You got Blake Griffin. You got Carmelo. I can see Melo, I can see Paul, but Blake Griffin, all decade, okay. Anthony Davis shouldn't be on this. I can see Westbrook. Anthony Davis shouldn't be second team. He shouldn't be on the all decade team. Blake Griffin shouldn't. Second team, first team. I don't know if Kawhi should be first team. I don't know if Kawhi should be first team. Steph, I can understand Steph. Steph Curry is a 2010 player. In conversations I've had with Pat, Steph Curry is a this generation NBA type of player. I don't think Steph Curry would be successful in the any decade where you could actually play defense. I don't think Steph Curry would be as successful as he is now. You don't have to agree with what I'm saying, but damn it, I said it, right? James Harden, he was coming along. LeBron, we know that. KD, we know that. Kawhi, I can see Steph. I can see LeBron. I can see Durant. I think James Harden and Kawhi Leonard maybe not should be on the first team. I think Dwayne Wade should be more so on the first team, but that's just me. Chris Paul, second team. I can understand Chris Paul being second team. I can also have an argument of Tony Parker probably should be on this before Chris Paul. Well, Tony Parker ain't on this, but third team, I think it's blasphemous for Dwayne and Kobe to be third team. Just blasphemous. That's just me. But all right. Paul George, LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't have a problem with them being 13. Giannis Antetokounmpo should not be on this at all. At all. All decade, at all. Who put this together? Because I'm looking at the NBA. So Kyrie Arnold did the article. I don't know if Kyrie Arnold was the person who put this together, what team. But I want to talk to the people who put this together and get some of the reasoning on why they put these these specific players in the order that they put them in or on these teams. That's just me. I mean, I can understand. I don't have a problem with Steph. Kawhi, no, I wouldn't put Kawhi on the all-decade team. I don't know if James Harden would make all-decade first team. I know Kawhi wouldn't with me. He wouldn't with me. I could replace Kawhi with Dwayne Wade. I could replace James Harden with Dwayne Wade. You know what I'm saying? So let's just start there. Like, let's just start. Kobe, just out of respect. I mean, what year did Kobe Bryant retire? Let me look that up. Let me look that up real quick and see what year Kobe Bryant actually, because I forgot off the top of my head what year Kobe retired, but let's see. What year? I ain't even pressing stuff. So what year, damn it, did Kobe retire? All right. 2016. Kobe retired in 2016, and he made, I get it because, you know, from 2013 to 2016, Kobe had major injuries and stuff like that. So, I mean, put him on 13, no big deal. But we all know Kobe, like, behind Jordan is, you know, second greatest shooting guard of all time. Kobe is Jordan, Kobe, then D-Wade, second greatest shooting guard of all time. So, I mean, this all decade, whatever. But I just don't think that the first team, second team, third team is made up of the best people who can be on first team, second team, third team. Let's just be real. If Kawhi wouldn't have won the final, if the Raptors wouldn't have won the finals, Kawhi wouldn't have made his first team. Let's just be real. But can we really say Kawhi has been that dominant throughout the decade? He's been good, but can we really say he's been dominant, that dude, throughout the decade? I don't know. James Harden scored a lot of points in the regular season. In the postseason, when you come to playing real basketball, playing defense, and the referees not giving him calls, James Harden just ain't that same player. I think you have to factor in postseason success. If we're talking about all decade, James Harden shouldn't be on the first team, factoring in postseason success. I would take Kawhi Leonard on this over James Harden. We can look at at least two rings Kawhi has won over the last decade. We can look at Kawhi balling in the postseason. We look at James Harden. We expect James Harden to regress every postseason. Think about that. We expect him to regress. So, second team, going back to this, Chris Paul, Russell West, because Chris Paul, same as James Harden in the postseason. I don't know. I mean, look,
I was never high on Blake Griffin. I wasn't. I thought Blake Griffin was drafted too high. I never thought Blake Griffin was. I thought it was good, NBA good. I thought it was all star, but I never thought he was that next level player. He still isn't. I was like, Blake Griffin can jump, he can dunk, and all that stuff. But hey, we've seen that before, but we've seen that before down at a high level. Blake Griffin ain't better than Sean Kemp. He ain't better than Charles Barkley. He ain't better than Grandmama Larry Johnson. So I'm just saying, if we talk about just looking at his total body of work, Russell Westbrook, see, that's the problem with the second team is none of these dudes have postseason success. But third team, it's a big deal. It's a big problem with me to have Kobe and Dwayne Wade third team all 2010. I think Dwayne Wade was a whole lot better. I think Dwayne Wade had a whole better 2010 camp, that 10 years than everybody in the second team and better than Kawhi and James Harden. Because Kawhi's coming along. Kawhi's time is now. Kawhi's time is now. Not taking anything away from it. We're going to talk about 2010s, that stretch. From 2010 to 2019, Dwayne Wade was that dude. And LeBron James would have no championships if he wouldn't have played with Dwayne Wade. I'm just saying. That's just my ideas, thoughts, and takes on this all decade. I just don't think this was constructed as great as it could have been. Some names and things could have been moved around. Some names probably could have been taken off the list. It's blasphemous to have Carmelo Anthony on the second team and Dwayne Wade ain't on the second team or Kobe ain't on the second team. I mean, think about what we're talking about now. Carmelo can't buy a team right now, but he's on all-decade second team, and it's 2019. Carmelo has been – we haven't looked at Carmelo as that dude in like 5 years. And maybe they should have waited to maybe 2021 to do this. But, hey, I don't know. But I'm just calling it how it is. This list of the all-decade team is kind of – it's very whack. It's whack. That's all that is to it. I don't agree with it, and I'm going to call it out as whack. So there it is. All right, so let's move on. There's a new film out now. The name of the film is called Brian Banks. And as you know, I said in the opening, it's about a black man who was a football player who was falsely accused of sexual assault. And they've made it's a movie out about now, and I'm going to make sure I go see it. So let me just read a little bit from the article and kind of give my thoughts on these things, situations and stuff that happened, right? So with his heart in the right place, and its style stuck unabashedly in the familiar grooves of a TV movie, Brian Banks tackles his subject, a sexual assault allegation, and its aftermath that would be challenging even without the scrutiny of the Me Too movement, right? Which let me remind you, the Me Too movement was started by a black woman, but the Me Too movement excludes black women, right? And the Me Too movement don't really help to bring down white powerful men who are sexual predators either. So. The director is Tom Shadak, and he made movies like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and Patch Adams. So it says this is a lightly fictionalized film, though maybe not the ones you expect from the director who come from more comedy backgrounds and things like that. When we meet Banks, a former high school football star, he's trying to resurrect his NFL dreams after serving nearly 6 years in prison. Falsely accused of rape in 2002 when he was just 16, and pressured by his scandalously ineffective lawyer to accept a no-contest plea, he sacrificed a guaranteed football scholarship to the University of Southern California. Now he's 25 and will, in a little bit, be too old to play in the league. With his ankle monitor and status as a registered sex offender preventing him from playing on the college team, Banks enlists the help of Justin Brooks of the California Innocence Project to have his verdict overturned, especially if he's innocent. The system is broken, laments Brooks, whose main job in and Doug Atkinson's formulaic screenplay is to repeatedly assert that Banks's quest for justice is futile. This positions Banks as the underdog hero, tirelessly arguing his case while battling dated minds and legal deadlines. In one sequence, as Banks races to make a critical meeting with the district attorney, his hard-headed parole officer shows up for a lengthy search of his car. Whether or not this really happens, we don't know. The incident feels like a manufactured tension in the movie, whatever, whatever. Yet if Banks, the Brian Banks giving the gobsmacking turn, the case eventually takes, packs less of a dramatic punch. This shit's stupid. All right, so basically the brother was falsely accused, and it messed his life up, falsely accused of sexual assault, and it messed his life up, and he has the rest of his sex offender, and he spent his time after he got out doing what he can to repair his reputation. But we all know that, like we just talked about with Dr. Chester, being in these athletic realms, we all know it's up to the others if they want to give him a chance or not. Does he still have the athletic ability? I don't know. He probably does. But if he does, remember, somebody still have to be willing to give him a chance. Right? And if nobody's willing to give him a chance, then he's going to have to do what he can to create his own opportunities for himself outside of football. But it's messed up that he was falsely accused of sexual assault and had his life derailed. There's so many men, and this is coming off the heels of the When They See Us movie, because there's so many black men who've been falsely accused of things and have spent time in this penal system that people profit off of. It's a profitable penal system. I remember, I forgot the state it was, but it was one state that sued the state because it wasn't enough people to fill up their prisons. So we know that people are being falsely accused, falsely arrested, falsely in prison, especially black men. Now, whether the girl was white or not, I don't know. So I really do need to see this movie, see if the girl was white, sound like some white girl stuff. I don't know. But we have to start giving different narratives to our young men and start creating systems to better protect our young men, whether more lawyers, more judges, more legal systems, all these different things that can happen. It needs to be out there because our men are being railroaded by an unjust system that just want to arrest somebody. And Brian Banks, it's not like this is a popular story, but this goes in line with the When They See Us. So I'm talking about this because it needs to be talked about. And I came across this because Brian Banks represents himself and a lot of other black men who have been falsely accused of specific crimes and had to spend time that they could have been bettering themselves, had to spend time in these penal systems because somebody decided to falsely accuse them. So I'm just saying, man, we have to look at all these things and really understand what's going on and understand the attack on black men. The attack on black men. That doesn't minimize what's going on with black women. That's just recognizing the attack on black men. And it's nothing new. It's been going on for hundreds of years, about 500 years now. Remember, the movie The Birth of a Nation came out in the early 1900s, which depicted a black man as a coked-up rapist looking to rape white women. And they say that caused the KKK to rise. KKK was going to rise anyway. So just being able to look at that stuff, man, like Brian Banks, it needs to be studied, needs to be looked at, and we need to create things that can help protect our men. Because there's a good number of black men who are being falsely accused. Now, you look at the sexual assault realm, they are trying to minimize false reports. As a black person in America, we understand
that false reports happen and how they derail people's lives. Just look at that. That's all I'm saying. Just want to bring attention to it. Just want to bring attention to it, and we got to do better on our end. We can't just sit around and just be victims. We got to stop just sitting around and be victims, just talking about it and being mad about it. How are we going to come together and create things that can help protect us? That's what we need to do. All right, so let's move on, let's move on, let's move on. So this is my pre-rant rant because this is funny and stupid all at the same time. DJ Cooper ain't serious about his life. So it says basketball star DJ Cooper banned after drug test revealed he's pregnant. Well, bitch, how you get pregnant? Using my girlfriend PP. Oh, yeah, find out my girlfriend pregnant. I'm suspended, I think they said, for 2 years from playing basketball. Oh, yeah, my girl pregnant. So American basketball player DJ Cooper has received one of the most astounding suspensions in recent memory. Cooper stepped away from AS Monaco late in 2018 for family reasons, though he attempted to join the Bosnian national team as a naturalized player later that year, so he's playing overseas. So the former Ohio University standout made it, however, and was instead handed a 2-year suspension from FIBA for failing a drug test because he's playing international ball. But it wasn't performance-enhancing drugs, recreational drugs, or any of the other usual suspects that thwarted Cooper. His drug test, according to EuroHoops.net, revealed that he was pregnant. So that means you using somebody else's pee-pee, boy. The test on the urine that Cooper provided revealed the presence of human chronic gonadotropin, HGC, which is a hormone made by a placenta during pregnancy. The urine, per the report, actually belonged to his girlfriend, who likely didn't know she was pregnant at the time. Well, guess what, girl? Now your ass knows. So FIBA suspended Cooper for fraud. He's eligible to return in 2020. Boy, you stupid, boy. First of all, the fact that you had to use your girlfriend's urine means that you know that you was trying to cheat the system. So you was out there, you taking something. You was taking something that was illegal. And then taking this, you're like, hey, baby, let me go ahead and use your pee. Let me use your pee, baby. Okay, baby, you can use my pee-pee. Not knowing he didn't, but yeah, not knowing that after shooting up the club, something started to grow. So she has a baby in her womb. She found out she's pregnant from FIBA. And, oh, yeah, your man suspended. Your man suspended. Now, I was looking at something. I read something earlier that was saying this article is saying he's going to be eligible for return in 2020. So something I was looking at earlier, I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was a video or actual article, but they were saying he was suspended 2 years. But nevertheless, this is how the family get kicked off on you not being able to play ball. Because you whatever substances that you're putting in your system are clearly illegal. That's why you're trying to cover them up. And you got caught trying to cover them up. Because you got a baby in your belly. Straight fraud, bro. What the hell was you thinking? How about don't cheat the system? How about that? How about just don't cheat the system? How about doing what you're supposed to do under the legalized ramifications or whatever? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but whatever you're supposed to be doing, whatever is legal to do, do that. Whatever won't get you suspended for a couple of years, don't do that. Well, now you got a family that's coming. Your family's starting, and you not working. But I'm sure there will be some kind of compensation or something like that. So it ain't crazy. It's crazy, though, but you stupid. You basically showing people that you're going to do what you want to do, how you want to do it, when you want to do it, where you want to do it, and you don't care what the outcome of it is. But guess what? All in all, hey, man, I'm a baller. My last name Cooper. I'm DJ Cooper, and I'm somebody's daddy now. Oh, my goodness. Come on, DJ, man. You got to do better than that, bro. Even if you're going to try to cover some things up, get some dude who don't use drugs or something.
Because you got to be careful about what you're doing, man. You can't just go out just doing stuff, man. That's stupid. You look stupid. You look real stupid in what you got going on, man. Like, you look real stupid, man. And now you got to end up in my pre-rant rap. Now you got people from all these sports outlets looking at you, calling you stupid. And we pointing our fingers at you like, boy, what the hell? Ron Isley, what the hell is going on between the sheets in your home? Well, we know your girl pregnant, so we know y'all hunching. You know you're a club shooter. We know that. And we also know that you are in this position because you were doing stuff that your ass wasn't supposed to be doing. That we do know. That we do know. Grow up, boy. Grow up, boy. At some point, you got to. Stop putting yourself in positions that can harm your future. Look at you now. You put yourself in a position and your future is compromised. Will somebody give you another chance? They probably will. I don't know. I don't remember this dude. I never seen him play. I didn't even know dude existed until the story came out. He might do, he might don't, but he's compromised his mission. We know that. His mission definitely is compromised for being a dumbass. Just do what you're supposed to do, man. You wanna get some kind of advantage over the other athletes, train harder, train longer, train smarter, watch more film than everybody else, spend more time in the weight room than everybody else, do more drills than everybody else. You know what I'm saying? But you can't cheat the system. And in cheating the system, you find yourself in this predicament that you're in right now, looking stupid. Like a fool, because FIBA had to tell your girl, you and your girl, oh yeah, hey, bruh, hey, DJ, come here, come here. Are you a biological male?
Oh, yeah. What you talking about? No, yeah, I'm a biological male. I'm born a man. I'm a man, bruh.
You sure you're a biological male, DJ?
Yeah, bruh, I'm a biological male. You talking about, bruh? Hey, you talking about, bruh? Bro, I was born. I'm all man. You want me pulling meat off on you, bro?
Nah, bro, don't do that. But the reason I'm asking you, are you a biological male, is because we ran your test. You know, we got to do our drug tests on y'all boys and all the things, right? We ran your test, and you pregnant. So I'm going to ask you again. You a biological male? Yeah, I'm a biological male. All right, so who pee you use then, bro? Because you're pregnant. Nah, man, let me look at that, bro. I ain't you nobody pee, bro. I ain't you, bro. That's my pee-pee, bro. I ain't you nobody a pee. Nah, bro. No. You can't be a biological male and pregnant. So who pee-pee did you use? Did you use your girlfriend? Yeah, man, I use my girl. So your girl pregnant. So you use your girl pee-pee. Oh, yeah, congratulations on being a father. Also, congratulations because we suspended your dumb ass. For trying to circumvent the system. You are suspended. You are suspended, DJ. Come on, DJ. Get your mind right, DJ. This one, you need a mentor. And if you do have a mentor, you need better mentors, or you need to consult your mentor, because this was stupid. This was stupid. Don't put yourself in a position where you got to cover up your pee-pee. Do what the hell you're supposed to be doing. And if you're not going to do what you're supposed to be doing, give up your roster spot to somebody who's going to do what they're supposed to do. Stop being dumbasses. Stop being dumbasses. There's always somebody who thinks they're smarter than the system. And when they get caught and when everything crumbles down on them, then they want everybody's sympathy. Stop being a dumbass. That's real easy. That's so easy to not be a dumbass. It's hard. You know how much work somebody got to put in to be a dumbass? Now you got to put work in to be a dumbass. Stop being a dumbass. That's all the time you're going to get on this, DJ. So, it's time for my weekly rant. And And my weekly rant is aimed square at the bitch ass Slave Patrol, also known as the NCAA, for instilling what we're calling the Rich Paul rule, because they mad that Rich Paul is more successful than all these other white agents. All right. So when the news broke this week that the NCAA is tightening its certification guidelines for those seeking to represent college athletes, the immediate backlash was fierce, and by the very nickname it was given, focused on agents. LeBron James dubbed it the Rich Paul rule on Twitter in honor of the super agent who represents James and several other top NBA players, but would not meet the new requirements because he don't have a college degree. Even though he's one of the most successful agents over the last 17 years, he don't have a college degree. The NCAA got a problem with that. So many agents and college basketball analysts agree the regulations with the NCAA said are intended to ensure players receive experience counsel before foregoing their college eligibility. But that doesn't mean that you have to, having a college degree don't mean your ass is experienced. I mean, you got a degree. You finished school. That's all that matters. I got a college degree. All that shit means is I finished school. I have completed the requirements to finish school. I got a degree in psychology. That shit does not mean I am capable of being a psychologist. That is not what that means. So Paul and other young agents, many of whom are African-American, they don't, like, Rich Paul don't have a degree. Let me read this from the beginning. So, many agents and college basketball analysts agree the regulations which the NCAA said are intended to ensure players receive experience counsel before foregoing their college eligibility seem intended to lessen the influence of Paul and other young agents, many of whom are African-American, but critics of the new rules said their concerns go deeper. The NCAA is making it riskier for athletes to explore a career in pro basketball. But see, guess what? You don't have to go to the NCAA. You don't have to play NCAA ball, top athletes. Fuck the NCAA. Y'all don't have to do that. There are other ways to do it. Go play overseas. Do what you got to do, but fuck the NCAA. If a quote-unquote student athlete wants to test the waters, let them test the waters. Don't put a toast in their hands, college basketball analyst Jay Billis said in the interview. Stay on their ass, Jay Billis. Stay on them. What the NCAA is doing here is putting up barriers to make it more difficult for the asset of the university to leave. Right. That's what they're doing. It's funny how the burden is disproportionately on football and basketball. The burden is disproportionately on men, and the burden is disproportionately on African-American men. Right. Because that's what it is. College and football people have to stay. Basketball, you got to play 1 year. Football, you got to play 3 years. All these other NCAA sports, I think you can go straight to professional. There's no barrier, right? So the new rules spelled out in a memo sent by agents Monday dictate that anyone seeking to represent a college player must meet three criteria. The agent must pass an in-person exam taken in November at the NCAA offices in Indianapolis, must be certified by the NBA Players Association for at least 3 years, must have a bachelor's degree. That's that bullshit. And because we know Rich Paul got everything except a bachelor's degree because he ain't need to go to college. The change comes less than a year after the NCAA relaxed eligibility rules for college basketball players, allowing them to enter the draft and consult with agents while retaining the option to return to college. That move made in response to recommendations by the Condoleezza Rice-led Commission on College Basketball, created in response to widespread corruption in the sports, was well received, an overdue acknowledgement of the type of player-advisor relationship that had long existed blew the board. But the Commission on College Basketball also recommended the NCAA certification process for agents should be more stringent. After the added layer of requirements became known, the NCAA released a statement on Monday. So this statement is saying, although some could have been successful without a college degree, as a higher education organization, NCAA values a college education and continues to emphasize the importance of earning a degree. Bitch, shut up. Bitch, shut up. Shut up. Bitch, you go to college to work for somebody else, unless your ass is smart enough to start your own. Stop that. College make people stupid as shit. College, I met some of the dumbest motherfuckers ever in life in college, and we talk about teachers. College does not mean your ass have the knowledge to do that shit. All bitches cheat their way through college all the time. Fuck is you talking about, NCAA? Come on, man. We were guided by recommendations from the Commission on College Basketball, which spoke with the agent and advisor community that the NCAA certification process should be more stringent than the current process. With this in mind, we benchmarked our new rules against requirements for other organizations that certify agents like the NBA, that the NBPA, which also requires agents to have a bachelor's degree. We recognize they and others provide discretionary waivers to the degree requirement, while different and distinct, our rules taken together, which is the manner by which they're meant to be examined, provided clear opportunity for our student athletes to receive excellent advice from knowledgeable professionals on either the college or professional path they choose. Having a degree don't mean you're knowledgeable. Having a college degree does not mean your ass is not. So you mean to tell me somebody who graduates college with a degree in like sports management or something has more experience and more knowledge than Rich Paul? There's a reason Rich Paul has the roster of clients that he has, because he knows what the fuck he's doing. It's the reason why Rich Paul is as successful as he is, because he knows what the fuck he's doing. It's the reason why Rich Paul basically is the number one agent in sports right now, especially the NBA, because he knows what he's doing. He spent the last 17 years perfecting his craft. So don't tell me a bachelor's degree means that you perfected your craft. Don't tell me a bachelor's degree means you know what the hell is going on. That is not what that means. A bachelor's degree only means your ass completed college. That's all that means. That's it. You completed the necessary requirements that that college had for you to graduate from that college. That's all that means. That don't mean your ass prepared to go out in the real world and make things happen. Fuck out of here. Who y'all think y'all talking to? Although some can and have been successful without a college degree as a higher education. Oh, I just read that. Fuck that shit. The negative reaction is understandable from agents who, after all, are vying for the chance to represent these players. But agents and outside observers say the new rules also hinder players by restricting the flow of information they may receive. Although only those who meet the NCAA's new criteria exclude significant segments of the agent pool, no matter how good they are at their jobs, not just those without a bachelor's degree, but also any up-and-coming agents who haven't been NBPA certified for 3 years. It also excludes those agents trying to break into an industry that's predominantly white and male. That's a big key, because a predominantly white male industry has been infiltrated by a black dude with no college degree who's kicking everybody's ass. So many, including agent Darrell Comer, who represents Los Angeles Clippers James Palmer and Washington Wizards Jason Randall, see the NCAA rule as a paternalistic in their base, which means it's white and racist. I don't see how this benefits players because you're limiting their options, Comer said. Every young man that makes the decision to test the waters and potentially leave college should have the ability to meet with the prospective agents they feel would be the best suited for the job. Truth be told, a two-year agent who may work at a firm where they've gained experience or even built a relationship with this young man versus someone who they may not know the kid but may lead 20 years of relevant experience. Both of those perspectives could benefit an athlete. It's not just any athlete the NCAA is restricting, contend Comer and others such as Jason Golson, who represents Al Horford of the 76ers. The NCAA rule doesn't extend to baseball and hockey, where players can be drafted and return to college without penalty, no matter of whom they consult, because it's some white boy shit. The NCAA seems to be targeting NBA and NBA agents, given other sports such as Major League Baseball or the National Hockey League are not required to complete the same guidelines for doing the same duties of advising and representing their respective student athletes. Blueson wrote this on his agency's Twitter page. So, I mean, basically, players, athletes, and parents and people, we got to redo the way we do come to sports. That's why I do my Life After Sports segment. We have to reconfigure how we get into sports and the people that we deal with. We have to totally circumvent the NCAA, overthrow it, the NCAA. All top college prospects who are going to come out in basketball and football, don't go. Don't go. Do something different. A new system has to be put in place, because this shit is racist. The regulations only appeal to basketball, the only revenue sport has complete control over. Said Billis, who knows the NCAA has less power over college football because conferences and universities control much of the revenue. There's also an element of race that Billis said can't be ignored. 50% of Division I men's college basketball players are black, right? Plus, in addition to career barriers being put up to their younger cohort, some agents also see the new regulations as a simple money grab by the NCAA, which would charge a $250 application fee and a $1,250 certification fee to complete the process. Fuck the NCAA, man. Fuck the NCAA. This Rich Paul rule is a racist rule that white men put in place to maintain the semblance of power that they had because they mad Rich Paul is out here balling and snatching up clients and putting clients in best positions to win. Like, I forgot the young man's name, but it was a young man, a highly touted prospect who was coming out of college, who was supposed to be in college this year. Rich Paul got to him early, worked out a deal where he would go overseas, and he had a $1 million internship with Adidas or ASICS or something like that. He had a $1 million internship as opposed to playing in the NCAA and making them millions of dollars. So they were like, well, it's compensated because these dudes' education has been all right. Like, Alvin Chester, Dr. Chester was just talking about $50,000 $50,000 and around that range to go to certain schools. So to go to USC, University of Southern California, or to go to some of these other schools may cost around $50,000. Let's say Duke, University of the Dukes. So Zion Williamson's half-ass career, college career, was worth, should have been probably worth $25,000 since he really didn't go to school the whole time. He did, but he didn't, right? So $50,000. So $50,000 versus making millions of dollars. Some of these, I know for a fact the University of Alabama makes $4 million just off of concessions alone at these games. The University of Duke makes millions of dollars a game. And y'all think the compensation is where his education is paid for? Yes, the education is paid for. But I had a rant the other day where they don't want the players to earn off their own likeness name, of their own likeness and name, and their own characteristics. They don't want the players to earn off themselves. It's difficult to come up with a system to be able to pay athletes, and then you want to minimize them even further by limiting the pool of agents that they will have to get with to ensure that they make it to the next levels and be successful. That's not what they're doing. They want to make it harder specifically for football and basketball. Because just see, that ain't the same for baseball, ain't the same for hockey, predominantly white sports. They can do what they want to do. But specifically basketball, they got to go through these dumbass rules by the dumbass NCAA. Hey, parents, black parents, when y'all going to learn? Stop just doing everything that everybody been doing before you who had no business acumen. This is business, man. This is business. And we're losing on the business end of this. Because people are just happy to be there. Damn that. Don't just be happy to be there. Make some noise. Shake some things up. Make it happen. I was going to be here anyway because I'm good enough to be here. I'm good enough to be here. So it's more than me just being happy to be here. It's me making sure I make a difference while I'm here. If you got a problem with it, you can kiss my ass. The NCAA is full of shit. This Rich Paul rule is blatantly racist. It's blatantly something that's going to hurt college athletes. And shit, and so you're going to tell me I can't choose my own agent? That's what you're going to, I can't choose the agent that I want to choose because you got a problem with some things that's going on. Because you mad at Rich Paul and other black agents out here balling over these white boys. So you're going to try to limit my interaction and the people that I can engage with because of your feelings and things. Fuck you, NCAA, and everybody who came up with this rule, you racist fucks. I hope you all have nothing but despair and bad luck. Because that's what you're trying to bring upon other people, despair and bad luck. You're trying to make it more difficult for those people to be able to do what they need to do, to make money, to conduct business and all these different things because y'all some jealous, cold-hearted, racist summer bitches. Fuck y'all and everything that you stand for. The NCAA, I don't know how many times or how many different ways I can tell y'all about the NCAA being full of shit and new things need to be put in place. New things are put in place.
When new things are put in place, black people, we mock it. We got to make our mind up too, black people. We either are tired of the bigotry, the bullshit, and the racism that the white folk doing. We either tired of that, or we going to not only when our own get started, start our own, but support it. Everybody laughing at the JBA that LeVar Ball created. But look at us now. Look at you now. You're mad at the NCAA, but you're laughing at the JBA. All these other supplemental leagues to the NCAA that give young black athletes a chance to shine, some who are started by black people. We scoff at that. We still have that white ISIS coda mentality. We scoff at these alternatives that can give our black boys a better opportunity in the long run. We scoff at those. But then we get mad when these white people be racist white people. Make your mind up, black folk. Make your mind up. You're either for racism or you're against it. But this Rich Paul rule is full of shit, it's racist, and everybody who was a part of this, making this happen, fuck all y'all and everything y'all stand for. Y'all don't give a fuck about these athletes, student athlete my ass. Y'all don't give a fuck about these athletes. Don't nobody give a fuck about no agent having no damn degree. Nigga, what's your experience? What's your experience? I don't give a fuck. You got to be part of this, part of the association for 3 years, and you got to have a, man, fuck all that, man. Fuck all that. Y'all. So y'all really trying to say Rich Paul, somebody like a Rich Paul ain't qualified. All right. Rich Paul is more successful at his job than everybody else who wrote this rule. And Rich Paul don't have nobody telling him what to do. Right. Because he's not a worker. He's an owner. To get your mind right, all you hating-ass white people out there. And I'm sure it's probably one or two Negro who's sitting on this who thought this was a good idea. So all you people who was a part of this, fuck all y'all and everything y'all stand for. And I hope y'all have some real awakenings, human awakenings, and things that happen to you. Because what y'all doing now is full of shit, and y'all need to kiss ass and go on about your business. But I ain't going to get the NCAA no more shine on this show because the NCAA is full of shit. And, you know, it just is what it is. It's wrong. It's wrong with a capital row. You know what I'm talking about? So, I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. I want to thank again Dr. Albert Chester II for coming on my podcast for my Life After Sports segment and chopping it up and dropping all the gems that he dropped. I hope y'all get your pen and paper, soak that up. Make sure you go back and listen to this and soak that information up. Definitely, definitely thank him for that. Thank you, Shakar Jenkins, for helping to make that connection happen. Shakar, she's been working with us on the podcast, so shout out to Shakar, everything that she's been doing. I appreciate your help. And, man, you know how we do what we do when we do what we do, man. It's the Fix Sports Podcast right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Remember, you can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/thefix. That way you can support us. You can become a patron and support us and everything that we do and help this show grow and do more and be more and be able to affect the community more. So with that being said, once again, I'm Joseph Ward, the Freedom Train Network. Or I'm Joseph Ward, the Fix Sports Podcast on the Freedom Train Network. And I'll see y'all next week, man. Two fingers in the air, like I said, just don't care.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless.